Recently, bat populations in North America have been devastated by a disease called white nose syndrome, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has announced that the disease has killed a staggering 5.7 million bats in less than a decade. We're joined now by Mylee Bayliss, the Director of Conservation Programs at Bat Conservation International. Mylee, thank you so much for coming back to our show.
Thanks for having me again. It's always nice to talk to you.
The government puts the number at 5.7 million, but don't some biologists think it's much higher?
Absolutely. You know, it's really difficult to estimate the number of bats killed thus far because they're killed in these, you know, deep underground in these hibernation caves and also scattered across the landscape. And bats are notoriously difficult critters to count. So I'm afraid that even though the estimates are 5.7 to 6.7 million bats, that variance in and of itself, you know, leads me to believe that, you know, we might quite possibly be looking at a very conservative estimate.
Now, when we've talked about it in the past, Mylee, you told us that we didn't know what was causing it. It was a mystery. People were studying it. Hasn't its cause been discovered recently?
Yeah, we talked a lot about that mystery, and the cause has been discovered. We suspected for some time that the cause was the fungus, Geomyces destructens, which many believe to be an introduced species from Europe, and that has been determined to be the cause through lab experiments, and so we now know that fungus is causing the disease.
Now, how would it come from Europe? Bats don't fly that far.
They don't fly that far, but people sure move that far. So
they bring bats with them?
No, but I think one of the prevailing hypotheses is that the fungus itself was inadvertently brought over somehow through travel. The fungal spores can stick to clothing and gear and equipment, and there are many who believe that it very likely came over, stuck to people, or in some other way by human transportation.
And it affects bats while they're hibernating?
It does. For those listeners who aren't familiar with it, the fungus basically alters the hibernation patterns of bats in some way, and it causes them difficulty in hibernation. They either arouse too quickly and starve to death, or it messes up their metabolism and their water balance, and basically it's killing bats where they hibernate by the millions.
Don't males and females hibernate separately? Are they equally affected?
They are equally affected. Male and female bats actually hibernate together.
Oh, they do? Because when I went to Carlsbad, they told me that the males were under some bridge in Mexico and the females were all in Carlsbad.
Well, that's the tricky thing about bats. There are some bats that hibernate over the winter, and there are other bats that migrate. So in Carlsbad Caverns, that particular species of bat, the Brazilian free-tailed bat, actually migrates to Mexico and spends the winter in separate caves. The bats that are being impacted by white nose syndrome actually hibernate in very specific locations, and they all hibernate together and drop their metabolism and really, you know, like a bear, just really hunker down for the winter as opposed to flying to Mexico or some other strategy.
And most of the bats affected here are in the Northeast. How far has this thing spread?
Boy, this thing has spread like wildfire since we last spoke. The original point of origin is in New York State, and the fungus is now closer to the Pacific Ocean than it is to its point of origin. So the fungus has spread as far west as Oklahoma, way up north. It's in four provinces in Canada and all the way south into North Carolina. So we're really seeing this as a continental problem now and not just a northeastern problem. And we don't know what's going to happen as it moves west and south, but it sure doesn't look good.
Well, how is it transmitted from one bat group to another? Do they share caves?
They do. Bats have this really unique ecology where they winter together in one group, and then those bats that hibernate together will go out all over the landscape and summer with other bats that may have wintered elsewhere. So there's a lot of interaction among bats from different parts of the country, or at least within different parts of the region. And they also do this interesting thing in the fall where they swarm at specific sites and mate and interact and share information. So there's multiple points along the life history, a seasonal life history of those bats, that they could be transmitting fungal spores from one to another And then when each of those individuals go into their caves to hibernate for the winter, they suppress their immune system. They enter into this state of hibernation, which makes them susceptible to this fungus burrowing through their skin tissue and really wreaking havoc and killing them.
So that they just fall.
On the order of 80 or 90%.
So they just fall to the ground dead?
A couple things happen. They either fall to the ground dead inside the caves, and many people have seen these heartbreaking images of cave floors literally littered with thousands of bat carcasses, where you can't even walk through the cave without, you know, wading through dead bats, and that's a horrible image. But the other thing that happens is, as these bats wake up or run out of fat reserves, it triggers them to go out onto the landscape and look for food because they think the winter's over, you know, and they fly out onto the landscape, and winter's not over. It's January, February, March, and they simply succumb to the elements, or die on the landscape, or land in the snow, or people's yards. I mean, those people in New York and Pennsylvania that have been dealing with this for a long time, many of those people have stories about bats littering their yards and landscapes.
And I'm assuming that's happening right now because it's particularly cold. My guest is Malia Bayless, the Director of Conservation Programs at Bat Conservation International. Is this a particularly bad time for bats?
It's a terrible time for bats. You know, bats are being pummeled on all from all directions. There are many things affecting bats right now, everything from wind to habitat loss. And white nose syndrome, unfortunately, is really coming at a terrible time for bats.
Why is this important to us? Bats are not the most popular of all animals, are they?
They should be popular. Bats are primary predators of night-flying insects. They're incredibly important to our ecosystem. And, you know, there was a recent paper that came out in Science that estimated the value of bats to agriculture to be between $12 and $173 an acre, which, if we estimate that across the country, we're looking at, you know, somewhere between $3.7 billion and $53 billion a year of a value specifically to agriculture from bats on the landscape.
So is there a campaign, a government campaign, to combat white nose syndrome, protect the bat populations?
Yes, there absolutely is. And I think the last time we spoke, this was really just getting up and running, but there is a full multi-agency, both state and federal agencies, and non-governmental organizations like Bat Conservation International are all working together to sort of address this, look for treatments, and also help bats recover in a post-white nose world in the places where it has really already impacted them to such a great degree.
Malia Bayless is the Director of Conservation Programs at Bat Conservation International. I want to thank you so much for talking with us again, and I'm looking forward to a time when we can say we have solved this problem. The bats are saved.
Boy, I am too, Leonard. Thanks for having me.